One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Welcome to How to Date, a show about how to master the messy, complex, and downright bizarre world of dating when you really didn't think you'd be back here again. I'm your host, Dr. Amantha Imber. I'm a psychologist, I'm 1 year out of my marriage, I'm a mum, and I'm immersed in the world of online dating.
Hi, I'm also your host, Monique Robin. I'm a mum of 4 kids. And a yoga teacher trying to find men who like me rather than my limber joints.
So, Amantha, tell me who's on the show this week.
So, today we have Michael Carr Gregg.
Yes, I've wanted to hear from him.
I know. We were both very excited when we were able to secure Michael because he's kind of like the go-to child psychologist in Australia, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like his opinion is so well respected. And in actual fact, it seems like he is the benchmark of opinion in that area. He's the PD psychologist that we all want to hear from.
Yeah. So I know you and I, we have lots of questions in our own minds when we're dating about children and when do we introduce children to the person that we're dating. Is that a good idea? You want to know whether one of your daughters should be screening people on Bumble for you.
Mother of the year, I know.
Mother of the year.
You can nominate me now.
Yes. So very excited to share that chat.
Yeah, the funny thing about this, Amantha, you'll remember, I begged for us to have Michael Carr Gregg on the show, and then me being the extraordinarily busy yoga teacher couldn't come to the interview.
And I think you'd lost your voice as well because you've been having some voice issues. I want to say you had no voice. Plus you were doing something yoga-y.
No, I could come, remember? And I said to you, but I don't know if I'll be able to get the questions out.
That's right, because you couldn't speak. And I said, I will fly solo again because psychologist to psychologist, you know, we just keep it
I know. I think you deep down don't like my third wheel in the picture when you're talking to a fellow professional.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, I like to keep it just one-on-one. So very excited to share our chat with Michael.
So, Amantha, tell me, how was your week in dating?
Okay, so you remember how last week I had the 3 dates in one night and then one of them I liked and he asked me out?
Yes.
So we met for a drink and it was a disaster because he was smelly.
What?
Like so smelly. Like I'm not talking BO or something that could be fixed with a product like deodorant. He stunk of like filthy mothball cupboard.
Oh, like clothes that have been shoved in the back of the cupboard stinky.
That smell, but really extreme. Like we went to a bar.
Hang on a second. Before you continue, and I'm not doubting your olfactory intelligence, but how can you differentiate between body odor, moth odor, old clothes odor? Seems very, very precise.
That's a fair question. And I think because I had to deal with this smell for an hour, I was thinking about it a lot. Like body odor has a certain, I want to say maybe saltiness to it. Like it's disgusting, but it's quite distinctive. Whereas extreme mothball, like it smells
that bloody extreme mothball smell. God,
it's like it smells of cupboard. You know, it smells of mothball cupboard. I don't know how else to describe it.
Okay, well, let's just go back one step. I also think, and in fairness to you, that body odor smell comes with a certain aesthetic, like a bit more of a wet, a damp, sweaty look.
It does. And yeah. The funny thing was, he was a very good-looking guy, like better than his photos. Mm. So really good-looking. So it was this weird contrast of I'm sitting here with this really attractive guy who stinks.
Oh, my goodness. So I think you're being a little bit negative, though, because really I'd be like, oh, my God, he thinks to buy mothballs.
But
wow.
That's fair. But then, no, it smelt like there was a moth problem. So maybe it's not the mothball smell. Maybe I've completely described that wrong. It was like there was stink living in his closet that he hadn't addressed with things that you can buy from the supermarket. That's a more accurate smell.
Okay, so got you.
Yeah, it wasn't a good smell. It was a really, really bad smell. And it was so bad that we were sitting like a normal distance away from each other. Like, I want to say a meter. That's kind of normal if you're sitting at a table at the bar.
COVID safe date.
COVID safe.
So tell me, 7 p.m. you were at this place?
Oh, no, 5 p.m.
Oh, 5 p.m., okay. So 5 p.m.
So an early evening
date,
which I feel like is a good time because if you're having a good time, it can just lead into dinner if you want it to be longer. But it's also a good time if it's not going well because then you can say that you have other plans.
So yes. Yeah. He might have been thinking the same thing.
Yeah, as he should have been, as we all should be in this dating world. So we meet up and immediately I can smell him. And it was so bad that I couldn't breathe through my nose. It was that bad. So I'm trying to breathe through my mouth for an hour. That was about all I could tolerate.
Hang on. I've just got to say one thing. You know, according to Yoga Australia, mouth breathing isn't recommended at the moment in this COVID environment.
Is that right?
So he actually was imposing a COVID risk on you.
Right, so it's not just the social distancing.
Totally get it. End it there. No, continue.
So, but you also he. I think he had bad breath as well. You know when you're drinking mineral water or something fizzy, and you kind of, you know, you do that like not you personally, but people do that. I don't know how to describe it. The inside mouth burp.
Yeah. Totally.
If I describe that in a way that people understand.
Such a good way. Yeah.
Okay. So. He did that a few times because we were drinking, mineral water because I didn't want to commit to alcohol because I knew as soon as I smelled him that I couldn't last very long.
Oh.
And so he did that inside mouth burp a few times and it really stunk.
Oh, no. Really bad. See, you and I are different. I'd notice this behavior and I'd go, okay, I'm committing to some serious drinking.
That's so funny. Mineral water, I must say, is my go-to. So I will generally drink mineral water on dates unless I'm really vibing with the person, in which case I'll upgrade to wine.
Okay, yeah, I know you're like that because you are pretty moderate with the way you drink.
Yes.
But I almost feel pressured to drink wine. Otherwise, I feel like I'm being uptight. Isn't that weird?
Oh, I feel pressure. I just don't give in to the pressure.
Okay, yeah.
I feel odd saying, oh, I'm just going to go with mineral water. I'm not a big drinker. No, I feel really socially awkward doing that, but then I'm like, fuck it. Yeah.
But if you know that they're not worth it, why not?
Exactly. It was just a mineral water kind of guy. So I think smelling bad is a fundamental deal breaker. And I didn't know whether to give feedback because I'm very anti-ghosting, you know that. So I did message him the next day to say, I had a lovely night. You're an interesting guy. I think we're at different life stages. So I wish you all the best with everything. So just a nice thing to close the loop.
Yeah, I'm at the stage in life where I like my clothes to smell nice. I like my cupboards to smell nice. But I remember that good old stage you're in. Yeah, okay. So you actually, in a way, did ghost him. You just did it more surreptitiously.
Oh, no, because I don't call that ghost, because ghosting is literally just disappearing from the planet.
Whereas, no, you were being a ghost disguised as a nice person. You
really? What should I have done?
Okay, so the literal definition of ghosting, I get it, is just disappearing off the face of the earth. But how can we honestly say that it's not ghosting, giving a rudimentary explanation that is so far removed from the truth? If you really, really wanted to be of service to this person, you would have said, look, to be quite honest with you, and this is going to sound really harsh, but I, as an olfactory expert, found your smell to be quite disturbing and I couldn't get past it.
See, I should have done that because, you know, it did occur to me. You can't be successful at dating smelling like that. Like, you just cannot. But then I began to wonder, was it just a bad combination? Like, do you remember that guy that I dated right at the beginning of COVID lockdown? And we'd started Zoom dating. So we'd clocked up about 12 hours on Zoom, I want to say. And then we decided that we would meet in person. And so he came to my house, and I remember talking with you and a couple of other friends saying, just say he smells really bad. So that was a serious concern, and he didn't. He smelled lovely. But then, and I was telling him that was a fear of mine. There are other worries as well, but smell was a big one because you can't get smell from Zoom.
Yeah, you can't convey that.
No. But I remember talking about it with him, and we're talking about how I think there is some science that if you are compatible, then you will like each other's smell. So it got me thinking, maybe I was just so incompatible with the smelly guy because we're just not compatible. Whereas other women would go on a date. Maybe you would go on a date with him and he would smell like roses to you.
Well, it's funny you say that. I can relate to that. I dated a guy, and I'm not sure if I even told you about it because it was just a few dates and it wasn't really anything that noteworthy, but I was physically extraordinarily attracted to him, and he had a sweaty body odor smell. And I've got to be honest, initially I was a bit repulsed, but actually I find it quite masculine. And after a little while, I just found it to be this raunchy man smell.
Really?
Isn't that weird? But that was because he was so ridiculously good looking. And the more I realized that his body odor was a thing, the more my brain transitioned bad smell into sexy masculine smell. So, yeah, I think it's probably maybe to do with the chemistry. Do you honestly believe that you were at different life stages aside from the smelly stage in life that you had now since departed from?
100%. That was a truthful comment. Okay. It wasn't me lying or making stuff up.
But I wonder if you would have been so judgmental about what stage he was in life and what stage you were at, because in honesty, you wouldn't have really cared if you were really attracted to him.
You know, I think I would have. I think, look, if the smell wasn't there, it wasn't good enough. There were other problems that I won't go into.
Yeah.
But that was the overriding one. So that was my week. So how was your week in dating?
Yeah, I took a bit of a break from dating this week. I found that I really needed to put all my energy into the kids, as you know. But it was nice. It was nice just to take a step back and not be worried about it. It becomes like a job after a while.
I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the big learning this week is bring air freshener on dates.
Yeah, look, Amantha, I hereby challenge you to report back to this guy and give him some actual honest feedback.
Oh, I'd love to say challenge accepted, but I'm gonna sit on that for a couple of days. I don't know if I'm up for that. Maybe I'll just refer him to the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
What a great way to find out about your smell. Our guest on today's show is child psychologist Michael Carr-Gregg. Michael is one of Australia's highest profile psychologists, and if you live in Australia, you've probably seen Michael on your TV or heard him quoted in the media on the topic of mental health and children. He works in private practice in Melbourne and consults to government, schools, and the private sector about mental health and the well-being of children. So let's head on over to Michael. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to be speaking to you as a mother that is dating. And I feel like I have all these questions, and I know my co-host, who has lost her voice, so I'll be asking questions on her behalf, has four children aged between 8 and 13. And I think one thing that we think about a lot is, when is the best time, or is there an ideal time, to introduce someone that you are dating or seeing to your kids? What is too early on in a relationship of sorts?
What a great question. Well, if you look through the psychological literature, the research suggests anywhere from 6 months to a year is ideal. But of course, it really depends on what's been going on before that. So, for example, if your children are still grieving the loss of the family of origin and there's still quite a bit going on, then you might like to delay it, because you've got to balance up what your needs are versus the needs of your children. And if they're particularly vulnerable, you don't want to add an additional stressor.
And just to clarify, the 6 to 12 months, is that 6 to 12 months after the start of the new relationship or after the end of the old main relationship?
No, let's be very clear. It's actually after the start of the new relationship.
Got it. Okay. And why 6 to 12 months? Why does the literature suggest that that's the sweet spot?
Well, I guess the most important thing is that we don't want to be rushing into relationships, getting kids' hopes up. A lot of kids do have what we call reunification fantasies, and it takes a while for those unification fantasies to be basically put to bed. And I think we need some time to establish the new co-parenting, the new relationship, and get the children into some kind of rhythm. So lots of my clients do bird's nesting. Do you know what that is?
I did bird's nesting and it nearly killed me. But can you explain what bird's nesting is for those that don't know?
Yeah, so the idea is that you basically leave the kids in the family home, and what happens is the partners basically take it a week, or the former partners take it a week on, a week off, and that way, theoretically, it's supposed to minimise the disruption to the children because they're not carting their belongings between two homes. But I think you indicated, clearly very, very stressful on the adults involved.
Yes, definitely. We did bird's nesting for about 5 months, and I don't think I spent more than 3 nights in a row in the same bed for that 5 month period. So yeah, we weren't week on, week off. The reunification fantasy is interesting. And I assume for those that haven't come across that term, it's pretty much the fantasy that your parents will get back together. How long does that typically last for? And how does that differ based on how old your children are?
It's got to do with all of those things, plus your child's personality, their temperament, their history of previous loss or trauma, whether or not the ex-partner is being cooperative, whether there's, you know, agreement around parenting orders. So all of those factors play into it. But I think the most important thing is you want to make sure that your children have come to terms with the fact that the relationship is over. It wasn't their fault, that their mother and their father are happier living separately, and that the new order is being established so that you can make sure rituals and traditions that you've taken from the original family are somewhat modified. But you just got to get them used to the changes. Children don't generally do change very, very well. They like ritual. They like predictability. So you want to minimize disruption as much as possible. And introducing a new partner would put an end to any reunification fantasies prematurely. Ideally, speaking as a child psychologist, I would want those fantasies to be put to bed without the kind of noise of another relationship in the background.
And how do you know when they have come to terms with it and when they no longer have that reunification fantasy? Is it obvious? What are the signs that we should be looking out for to go, okay, they've come to terms with it, it's all right to introduce a new partner?
Generally speaking, you're dealing with a loss experience, and all new relationships or blended families are based on a history of loss somewhere along the line. So it really depends on whether or not your child has clearly moved on, whether they've re-established what they would normally be doing so that they're back at school and not having any learning problems or no new learning problems, that they've still got a group of pro-social peers that they can hang out with, incredibly important for their psychological development. So if that's going well, that's a good sign. That they're beginning to feel comfortable being away from you. So we want all children eventually to emancipate from us, to break the childhood bonds that binds us to them. when you get kids who aren't ready, they may in fact lose some of those developmental milestones, and they're more clingy, more dependent on you. And that's not a good sign. That means it's way too early. And the last developmental task is really about a child who's ready to re-engage with what I call healthy risk-taking behaviours. So art, music, dance, drama, sport, all of those are good signs.
So if by and large your child or your children seem to be going okay day to day, they're not exhibiting those behaviours, is it fair then for someone to assume that they've worked through the reunification fantasies and they've come to terms with, in their own way, that their parents are not going to get back together?
Yeah, and I also think that you can check that out by simply asking with them. I think following the breakup of a relationship, it's really important to have a ritual of emotional check-ins with children, so that once a week or maybe fortnightly, you spend some time with a particular child alone, you get down to their eye level, and you don't have your devices and they don't have theirs, and it's just a special one-on-one time where mom or dad is just checking in with, you know, are you okay? How are you going with these changed circumstances? And really exploring how things are going with friends, how things are going at school, and that things are okay between you and them. And of course, if they are in contact with their ex, just making sure that they have an understanding of, you know, both of you are happier now, and that we are co-parents, and, you know, things are all right. So I think the emotional check-in continually over that period of 6 months or a year, that's going to give you a really good indication that they're okay to, for you to move on.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And then I guess introducing children to the concept that mom or dad is dating, how do we bring that up, and when do we bring that up? Or would we only bring that up around the time that we're actually ready to introduce them to someone significant in our lives?
I would only bring it up when it's necessary for you to do that. If you're going to jump back into the dating pool, you've got to make sure that you yourself are okay, because the barometer for the psychological well-being of the children and how they're going to handle this news is really your well-being. So is your diet okay? Are you exercising? Are you sleeping okay? Are you hanging out with your friends and engaging in a sort of meaningful existence? And if all those things are good, then I think it is perfectly reasonable for you to introduce the idea that mum's not a nun, dad's not a hermit, and that they have a right to have a relationship. And I mean, I don't mind if you've had that relationship going for a while and you're absolutely sure that you want to introduce the concept of this other life that you have to them, that's fine. The big question is when and how then you introduce, or whether you introduce, those children to your new partner. That's the million-dollar question.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A little while ago, I was struck by the behavior of a guy that I dated for a little bit, and he was quite cavalier in his attitude to introducing women he was dating to his children. Like, I remember the first time I went on a date with him, I met his kids, albeit very briefly for a few minutes, but that struck me as strange. I was obviously introduced as a friend. And I know that with other women that he's dated, they would meet the kids within a few weeks, but introduced as a friend. So I'd love to get your opinion on that. Is that something that we should do because we want to see what our potential partner is like around our children? Or is that dangerous because that friend might no longer be a friend in a few weeks or a few months?
Yeah, look, I think it is a bit dangerous. Remember what I said about minimizing disruption. So I think that, you know, it's tough to be a kid in 2020, particularly with the coronavirus and all the disruption that that's brought. Prior to coronavirus, 1 in 7 of our primary school kids and 1 in 4 of our secondary school kids already had mental health challenges. So I don't even know what we're really entering into uncharted territory in terms of how those figures are going to be affected by the social isolation, the school closures, the disruption to their lives. So, look, I think this is a very vulnerable population. I wouldn't be cavalier about introducing my children to a new partner. I think you have to take it very seriously. And I think you have to assess whether or not, in fact, this is the right person to introduce your children to. And you can learn a lot, I think, from how they treat their own kids if they've had kids from a previous relationship. If they don't see them or they don't take care of them, that to me is a whopping great big red flag.
What are some of those things that we should be looking for if we're dating someone who is also a parent and we're trying to suss out what would they be like as a potential step-parent to our children?
Yeah, well, I think one sign is if they are pushing too hard to meet your kids too soon. I think that's not a good sign. If they demand to be put ahead of you, of your kids, and that they really have got their priorities a little bit strange, because if you're going to be respectful in a relationship with someone else, you have to recognize there was a pre-existing family and that that family has needs that are really important. Once, of course, you have introduced them, then you don't want them telling you how to parent. You want to see a willingness on their part to be part of your kids' lives. And the greatest test of all is that your kids feel uncomfortable around them. Kids have a brilliant built-in BS detector. And sometimes it's better than yours because remember, you're all caught up in your oxytocin rush. And we know in laboratory experiments that if we inject people with oxytocin, they make really dumb decisions for a while. So I think those are some of the signs that you might like to think about.
I think it's interesting then, almost like it feels like a bit of a dichotomy where we shouldn't introduce our new partner until 6 to 12 months into the relationship, I guess once we're pretty sure that they're a keeper, but then we could be in for a major deal breaker. Like if at the 12-month mark, we finally introduce them to our kids and our kids are not feeling secure or comfortable around them, what do we do at that point? And is that an argument for maybe introducing them sooner to the children so that they can pass that test, so to speak?
No, I think the reality is that teenagers, for example, if you had teenagers and you were introducing a new partner, teenagers are a whole different kettle of fish. And the best you could ever expect in my 30 years of experience working with families in these type of situations is a kind of friendly relationship developing between your teenager and your new partner, which is a little bit like the sort of relationship you'd have with a really good teacher at school. That's the best I've ever seen. It's not going to be, you know, add water, instant love, because it just doesn't work that way, particularly not with teens.
And how about for younger children? So I mentioned my daughter is 6.5. What should we be expecting, I guess, in those younger primary years to older primary school years?
Well, again, it depends on all of those other factors that I talked about. But I think that if you have a 6-year-old who is really quite accepting and interested in the idea of mummy dating and really is caught up in the whole romance of that, that's fantastic. That would end really quickly if you brought your new partner into the regular rituals that you do with your six-year-old, and suddenly she felt like she was being edged out. So my personal view is that you shouldn't have a partner stay overnight, for example, when kids are there, for at least a year, because, again, that's a lot for kids to take on. And, of course, they then think that their own dad will be forgotten, and that can cause problems as well. I mean, all of this is in an ideal world, because what you have to remember is that, sadly, in a lot of breakups, there's still a great deal of resentment. There's feelings of loss and grief. And in a perfect world, they wouldn't project that onto their child and make it difficult for you. But, of course, we don't live in a perfect world.
So with the sleepovers, so you say waiting a year, and is that a year from when they first met this new partner? Okay.
Yeah.
And why a year? I'm sure that there would be a lot of listeners that probably haven't done that, or that would be thinking, goodness, that's a long amount of time. But yeah, why so long?
Oh, well, the research seems to suggest that 12 months is time for children to get used to the idea of you having another person in your life. And that's an adjustment period. If you were to have them over and they wake up one morning and they come into your room and there's a bloke in your bed, that can be quite confronting and upsetting for young people. So I think you've got to do this slowly. There's an old, I think it's a Chinese saying, that the best way to cook fish is really, really slowly. And I'm using that as an analogy for how to introduce a partner to your child and get them to the point where they understand that this is actually now serious, and that this could actually be a major part of their life. They might actually have a stepdad, and that takes time to adjust to.
I hear a lot of people use the language, this is mommy's special friend, or, you know, sort of euphemisms like that. What's your take on what is the language that we should be using when we do introduce a child to a new partner?
Well, I like the word partner. And I think that if that's what it's going to be, then we should name it. I mean, we go out of our way, I think, in society these days to be direct in terms of helping children, I don't know, identify their body parts. I think psychologically we should be really clear about where this relationship is going. I think special friend is a bit ambiguous. I much prefer, no, this is mummy's new partner. This is who she's going to hang out with on a relatively continual basis.
And for listeners that weren't, you know, familiar with the research or your great advice around waiting 6 to 12 months before introducing your children to someone that you are in a relationship with, and maybe they have done that a little bit earlier on, like maybe within the first month or two, because they're overcome with all those happy hormones and they're thinking that they've met the new love of their life. What would you suggest there? Would you suggest just maybe reducing the visits a little bit, or what should listeners do that are in that situation?
Yeah, I think reducing the visits or just tapering them over time. The most important thing you have to remember here is that these children didn't ask to be born. They didn't ask to be born into a broken relationship. They need a sense of agency. They need a sense of predictability. And they need to know that they're safe and they're valued and they're listened to on an ongoing basis. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to, you know, go into permanent seclusion for the rest of your life. You're more than entitled. And I advocate for people to do this. And, you know, life is worth living. And it's clearly much better to do that with someone than on your own. Loneliness is really bad for you psychologically and physiologically. There's really good data on that now. So I would want anyone in this situation to find a soulmate, to find a partner. But you do have to take into account the psychological needs of your children. And I don't think any parent would want to sacrifice the mental health of their children on the altar of just shacking up again with someone else.
Definitely. And what should our attitude be towards people that we're dating that are very happy and excited for us to meet their kids before that 6 to 12 month mark? Should we step up and go, actually, no, that's too early? Or if our partner's really pushing for that, should we be all right with that?
Look, I think it's perfectly reasonable for them to express that view, but I think it's also perfectly reasonable for you to go, oh, you know what, I just don't think it's right, just the right time yet. My kids are still working through stuff. And, you know, that's a really interesting test to see whether or not they really are listening and caring about you, because I love the fact that they're willing to be part of your kids' lives, but you have to be the one who determines when that time is right. They don't know your children like you do. They don't know the personal history of loss. And by the way, one thing I should say is that you must be with your child if and when they meet your new partner, because that reflects the importance, the primacy of the relationship that you have to the child. So you don't turn up with them and meet the kid. You're there with the kid and then the person turns up. I know it sounds like a small detail, but boy, it can make a big difference.
I could absolutely understand why that would make a huge difference, and I think that's great for people to keep in mind. I know Monique wanted me to ask a question because one of her daughters gets very involved in her dating life to the point where she likes to get on Bumble and screen people for Monique. And Monique wanted me to ask, is she scarring that daughter for life by letting her do the initial screening on Bumble? Should she just put a stop to that right now, or is that okay?
How old's the daughter? Do we know?
Yeah, she's like late primary years.
Late primary. Wow, I don't like it. I'm sure Monique's a very lovely person, but as a child psychologist, I don't like it. I don't know why. That's the sort of thing that I would do with a friend, but I'm not sure I'd do it with my child. And one of the big issues that we face in Australian parenting today is a little bit of a tendency for mums and dads to treat their children like their friends. Now, first of all, I've never met a 12-year-old that really wants a 45-year-old friend. But more importantly, I think the roles are different. The next thing is she going to be discussing the intimate details of her sex life with her daughter? Is she going to be talking about that sort of stuff? I mean, to me, there are boundaries. And I think that there's stuff that you would talk about with a friend and there's stuff that you talk about a child. Your job as a parent is to be the frontal cortex of your child while they're growing up, to give them the skills and the knowledge and the strategies to deal with life in an age-appropriate way. So, no, I don't think she's scarring them for life, but it's not what I would do.
All right, I'm sure after listening to this, she will put a stop to that behaviour. Now, Michael, my last question, given we're nearly out of time, is if people want to learn more about what you're doing and consume some of the work that you are putting out into the world, what is the best way for people to do that and connect with you?
Well, I have a website, michaelcargreg.com, and people are most welcome to go to that, and they'll discover all the weird and wonderful things that I'm up to.
Amazing. Fantastic. We will link to that in the show notes. Michael, it has been an absolute pleasure and highly insightful and helpful for me as a parent who is dating. So thank you so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Samantha, tell me, what was your biggest take home from that interview?
I think for me, it was just about having really clear, I want to say, rules in my head around when I should introduce my daughter to people that I'm in a relationship. So kind of knowing that really it is somewhere between that 6 to 12 month mark from the start of your new relationship is the ideal time. And that makes a lot of sense. And I did wonder about this because, as I mentioned in the interview, and you will know this, I did date someone who was quite liberal with their boundaries around their kids. And I was surprised around that. But then I thought, maybe he's read research that I'm not aware of. But it was really, I think, just clarifying to speak to Michael to go, okay, this is how I should do things to, you know, really protect my daughter.
Yeah, I find that really interesting too, and it's a question I ask myself. I also know that a lot of people introduce partners as friends, and then once the children take to the friend, they make the transition from that place. So it's nice to get some clearer guidelines around that.
Yeah, I think so. A few people do that, or they'll say, oh, this is my special friend, or, you know, just some rubbish like that. And I like Michael's point around you just want to minimize disruption. Like if you've come out of a relationship that has broken down, a marriage or de facto or whatever, that's such massive disruption for children to deal with. And then introducing them to friends, in inverted commas, that are probably going to be transient, let's face it, is another disruption. Like they just don't need that. I feel like now thinking about that, that feels like a really selfish decision because it's really that person just saying, oh, I just want to spend more time with you, so I'll just invite you to spend time with my kids so I can see you more, potentially.
Yeah, and it adds complexities that don't need to be there. And also you try and do it with the aim of gradually getting the children used to it, but at the end of the day you then have to deal with another problem, and that is change the tenor of that introduction eventually if it's going to go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then how do you go, oh, yeah, they were my friend, but now there's something more? That's really confusing. So it's just like, just get it right from the start. So I must say, before that interview, I had my guesses about what to do, and I haven't introduced my daughter to anyone that I've been dating, but now I'm really happy to have that clarity. So for me, that was personally such a useful interview.
Absolutely, I agree.
That is it for today's show. If you have enjoyed How to Date, why not share it with other people that you think could benefit from some of the advice that we are offering? And if you enjoyed this episode, we would love to get your feedback. Please leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listened to this show from. And we will see you next time.
See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.